flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
So here we are, Friday before the two championship games. I've been doing this for nearly 20 years, and for almost all of the 20, I didn't think there was a chance in hell, Denton, of doing this Friday show before Championship Sunday with our team playing in one of the games. There were a couple of years, two in particular, where there was a glimmer of hope. I'll get to those here in a moment. The show is a busy one here. It is a Football Friday show, but a lot more for obviously all of us. Three guests on the show today. Ben's going to join us at 10:35. We'll get the injury updates. We'll get the projection on what they're going to do along the offensive line without Sam Cosmi. We'll also talk about the status of Jalen Hurts. We'll get Ben's layout for the game and his prediction. At 11, Bill Barnwell from ESPN will jump on with us. Bill wrote a story yesterday about the Jaden Daniels rookie campaign and determined whether or not it was the greatest all-time rookie season for any position. And then Clinton Portis will be with us at 11:35. We've got keys to a win over the Eagles. I'll get to those. We've got predictions on the championship game in Philadelphia. We'll give you guys a chance to weigh in on that. I've got a smell test for Championship Sunday. I have not lost on the smell test, and this is documented. Denton knows it, and most of you do too who listen to the show. I have not had a losing weekend with my picks here on the Friday show in 3.5 months, 14 weeks. We're going to rank the non-quarterbacks in the game, all right? We have the best quarterback. There's no question about it. How would you rank the next top five players in the game? Denton and I will do that. And we've got a lot more. News will include, yes, I'll briefly mention and talk about what I watched last night, Maryland's big win over Illinois, 17th-ranked Illinois on the road. The Caps' big win, Ovechkin getting an empty netter. They've won six in a row. And even something, by the way, interesting in not a great way about the Wizards' loss in L.A., to the Clippers. But I think that this is just the third time in the last two decades that you could legitimately feel like there's a chance. Obviously, we're here already, but I think we felt this way even heading into the postseason. When Gibbs was here, you know, there was such a nostalgic pull from Coach Joe being back in a belief that he had kind of ridden back into town to save us from, you know, the purgatory that we had started to enter at that point. So those 4 years always started with some level of belief. But in 2005, you know, the way they got it going at the end of the year, winning five games in a row, there was a sense that they could make a run when they got to the postseason. And they did. They won a playoff game, and they were close in the divisional round. But even Joe didn't have enough, you know, perfume to cover up all of the Snyder stench. You know, that was the best chance you had during that era, because it was, you know, there was a belief from the owner that the coach actually knew more than he did. But even Joe couldn't figure it out. 2012, I mean, there was definite belief heading into that postseason. You know, similar in some ways, but not in most ways to this year. You know, the biggest difference is being that team was owned by Dan. This one isn't. That team had a quarterback that was injured and just wasn't nearly the same from a talent perspective or a capability standpoint as the one we have this year. But they had won seven games in a row. They were on a roll, and they were up 14-0 in a playoff game at home in the wild card round against Seattle before it all ended in a crumpled mess on that crappy, you know, brown FedEx Field. But really, like, in the 20 years of doing this, and you guys, you know, we could go back through the entire Snyder era. 99 was that first year. I never give him credit for that because he didn't come in and have time to mess it up. But those were the only two that legitimately had a chance, but ultimately we were just suspending what the reality was, and that is they weren't good enough because they weren't owned well enough. This is new, man. This is new for all of us, even for those of us who lived a different experience during the 80s and early 90s. It was just so long ago. You know, you're talking about a generation and a half ago, right? A generation is 20 years. So more than a generation and a half. The league was different. Football was different. The city that we live in was different. Nobody referred to this area as the DMV back then. Denton, did you know that as a young person? Did you know that the DMV designation, you know, the nickname for our area, the District, Maryland and Virginia, or as somebody said, I'm forgetting who said it, Delaware, Maryland and Virginia? Who said that on a broadcast? Somebody did. Did you know that DMV didn't come around until maybe, I don't know when, honestly, I don't know when it started. I know this, it wasn't how you referred to this city in the 80s or the early 90s. I would say it maybe came around in the late 90s. Somebody could help me with that, but did you know that, Denton? Well, that hasn't been the way we've described this city?
Seeing as I was ever? Born in 95, we've only called it the DMV, so no, I did not know that.
Yeah, and you know, you don't remember what it was called in 1995 or 96 or 97 or 98 because you were too young. But I would think that right when you were aware of anything is probably when it started. Obviously, there was just a lot more about the team that was different, you know, the last time we were here. The name, clearly. It is so interesting right now what we are living through. And, you know, a lot of people are happy, there's no doubt. There are a lot of people who are also very conflicted. You know, there's no doubt about that. But nobody can deny that this team is on the verge of being the biggest turnaround and most shocking champion in the history of the NFL, and one of the most stunning and shocking championship teams, if they get there and win it, of all time in any sport. You know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, 4-13, but it's not just 4-13. Okay, the 5-11 Patriots had the same coach when they came back in 2001, and many of the same players. The 99 Rams, which you would really look at and say they were 4-12 in 98, and nobody gave them much of a chance, especially after they lost their starting quarterback Trent Green in the postseason. That was a shocker, but Dick Vermeil was in the third year of being a head coach at that point, second or third year. And they had some similar players. This team changed everything. General manager in front office, head coach in coaching staff, you know, 60% of the roster. And, of course, a rookie quarterback who started day one. And that's precisely why their over-under in Vegas was 6.5. And it wasn't, 11.5 or 10.5. Now, one person legitimately thought, there were a few people. And yes, I did predict 10-7 and at least a wild card round playoff game before the season began. But that's just because I was the biggest Jaden Daniel fan around, along with, my producer and partner, Denton Day. Because we were so in on him, we thought there was a chance they could be better than what most people thought. But nobody outside of this market, and I don't know how many people inside the market, gave them a chance to be even a competitive team. This year started with, the logical position of you just want to find out if the quarterback can play. You just want to know when you get to 17, week 18, 17 full games, that they got it right and there's a chance that in 2025 and 2026 and 2027, you can become a contender, a winner. Even the team that talked about recalibration versus rebuilding, they didn't behave in a way that said we're going for it. There was not an expectation in that building of being where they are today. There's no way. They can talk about it and they can put it up on a board as a goal, but they're off season. Pretty much told you that this was a figure-it-out year. Now, they didn't want to be non-competitive. They wanted to establish a culture, a way of playing, which they have done. No matter how bad they've played at times defensively, especially against the run, nobody can deny that this team plays hard. This team plays with a high motor. This team plays with high energy. This team has a competitive, badass streak to them. They have a toughness to them. That's the only thing that Quinn promised. Quinn promised, that there was going to be an identity to this team, that we were going to watch this team and we were at the very least going to be able to walk away and say, that team plays physically and it plays hard. I remember after the opener saying that wasn't very physical and it didn't seem like they played very hard. Of course, it was a brutally hot day and it was the opener. But that's the last time. From that point forward, not only has this team played hard with a relentless motor and energy level, with a badass competitive streak, but they've been a smart team. How many teams with a rookie quarterback just play game after game without making mistakes? They don't make mistakes. They never beat themselves. And they're always ready. Other than really the Dallas game at home, what game can you point to and say, yeah, they weren't ready for that game? I tossed the first Philadelphia game out. That's a Thursday night. Thursday night football stinks. A lot of teams look like they're not ready for Thursday night games, especially when they play a game 4 days earlier that is a down-to-the-wire, epic, which is what they played against Pittsburgh the Sunday before. Tough team. Yeah, the Steelers were really good in that moment that they played them. But, man, we are on the verge. We're already in book territory. You know all the beat reporters, and it's typically a beat reporter that ends up writing a book, somebody or a columnist. Over the years, it's typically a writer. It's a newspaper writer, it's a newspaper, a reporter or a columnist, and, covering the team on a daily basis and really getting to know everybody inside that building. There's already a book, even if they lose Sunday, there's already a book. Because 4-13 to 14-6 if they lose Sunday is still an amazing turnaround. Look, the book could just be on Jaden himself and the rookie season he had. If they win Sunday, though, there's definitely a really good book. Even before they play against Kansas City or Buffalo. Tommy, on the podcast yesterday, he said the 69 Miracle Mets, because they were so awful in 68, is the greatest turnaround and the most incredible, shocking, stunning championship win in sports history. And I think a lot of people will point to that and say that it is. In football, man, because of the one-and-done nature, man, is it hard. You know, it is. And when you're talking about a rookie quarterback, they had, as Tommy pointed out, they had a lot of their pitchers coming back the following year, and a couple of good ones, you know, including Tom Seaver, you know, and a couple of others. I'm forgetting their names now. I'm not a Mets guy from 69. Kuzman, maybe. But Washington started a rookie at quarterback. This is what will kind of separate it from anything else. And he had to carry the team. This wasn't defensive-led. This wasn't tough defense, great special teams, and man, can they run the ball. You know, Brock Purdy's playing well, but San Francisco's got the best defense and the best run game in the NFL. Washington hasn't had anywhere near the best defense, and Washington has had at times a very good run game, but the quarterback's been a big part of the run game. This has been a quarterback-led turnaround for the ages, all time. And we get to watch a championship game Sunday in Philadelphia with our team in it. It's still last night. I'm watching the Maryland-Illinois game on FS1. And they got the full screen, not the full screen, but they got the ticker at the bottom, you know, rolling through during the game, you know, showing Commanders versus Eagles Sunday, 3 p.m., Fox, NFC Championship game. I kind of wish it said Washington, Philadelphia, but that's just me. But anyway, just the idea, and I said this after on Monday's show when, you know, you had Jim Nantz and Mike Tirico on the Sunday games, you know, at the end of their games, just putting up and talking over the full screen graphic of the Final Four. This is a special Sunday in the NFL. It is, to me, the last real feeling of a football weekend. It is every year. And Washington's on the biggest stage it's been on in 33 years. And the bottom line is, there isn't anybody that isn't giving them a chance to win this game. Everybody that's watched them and everybody that's watched Philadelphia understands that if Washington wins, it's not a shocker. They are a team right now playing with so much confidence. They walk into these places, they expect to win. You know, the Tampa and Detroit games were so impressive from that standpoint. They're vulnerable in different areas of their team, but they don't believe it. They play to win, they are competitive, and they're fearless, and they're feeling it right now. We see this in sports all the time. The sum of the parts is greater than the whole. And then, of course, there is the quarterback. And he will be the best one on the field Sunday in Philadelphia. If it's about quarterback, and then maybe secondarily about coach, Washington's going to the Super Bowl. All right, Ben Standig at 10:35. Bill Barnwell at 11. Clinton Portis will join us at 11:35. I know he is pumped up about this. Keys to a win over the Eagles. My keys coming up next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right. How do they do it Sunday? This isn't going to be super elaborate. It is much different than the last two games. The last two games were super easy to sort of pregame. You had great offenses. You had not so great defenses. And it was the offense that played at least slightly better. And it was the offense that didn't make the mistakes. And it turned out that that is exactly why Washington won. They played better offense than Tampa and Detroit, even if it was just slightly better offense than Tampa and Detroit. But they played cleanly, and Tampa's offense and Detroit's offense did not. Tampa had the one critical turnover inside their own 15-yard line. They also botched a third and inches when they were trailing 20-17, and Detroit turned the ball over five times. Ball game, they're here. This is different because Philadelphia is not the offensive juggernaut that Tampa and certainly Detroit are, but they are the best defensive team in the NFL. And on offense, they certainly have the ability to run the football as well as anybody can in the NFL. They finished number two in the league behind Baltimore in rushing. All right, the keys. Number one, I think this is the most important thing, and it's not anything dealing with numbers. It's not dealing with percentages. It is for them to continue and to go in there and be the team mentally that they have been all season long, especially in these first two playoff games. Walk in to the Link on Sunday with that, you know, anybody, anywhere, anytime belief. Toughness, relentlessness, competitiveness, confidence. Hey guys, confidence is everything. They've had it all year long and they play well and they play to win. If they lose Sunday, I don't think it's going to be because they didn't believe they could win or they weren't absolutely convinced that they were going to win. It's going to be because the Eagles played great. The Eagles are going to have to play great to beat this Washington team. They went into Tampa and Detroit believing they would win. You could see it. And they played that way. They were aggressive, not necessarily on defense, okay, even though they got five turnovers, but that offensive mentality of attacking. And then, by the way, on fourth down, yeah, we've got number five. And it's not only analytically in our favor to do so, we think it will demoralize you every time we make another one, because we will. They're here because they have this swagger right now. More than anything else, I'm going to say after this, this is why they have an excellent chance Sunday. They not only think they can do it, they know they're going to do it. It is the power of confidence, the power of believing. They're feeling it right now. That's not made up stuff. That's not fan talk. They've been saying it. Number two, you've got to win on Sunday with, once again, explosive and clean offensive football. I think this personally sort of plays out in quick game, passing game against their zone coverage. I think the quarterback, of course, has to be involved in the running game. I think this is a handling of Jalen Carter and not letting him ruin the game. He's not the only one that can ruin the game, although he is probably right now, if not the best interior defensive lineman, one of the top two or three in the game, on his way to becoming the best. He's a dominant player, and Washington's hurting with the loss of Sam Cosmi. That's a big loss. That's a big loss on the field. That's a big loss in the huddle. That's a big loss in the locker room. How they handle that will be huge. You know, they have struggled against Philadelphia with interior domination of their offensive line. A couple of the times that it happened against the Cowboys, I think in one of those games there was no Biotish, but you have to protect the interior of the field offensively, and that means dealing with Jalen Carter. I think this is, you know, Jaden's game, as in Jaden Daniels' game, once again. He's rushed the ball 29 times in these two playoff games. He is going for it. He understands the moment. This is the Alabama game last year in Tuscaloosa before he got hurt. That was the game, and that night and that Monday that Denton and I were in here saying, hand him the Heisman. It's over. He's clearly the best player in college football. And my God, what a good NFL quarterback he's going to be. This is walking into Tuscaloosa and playing the way he played before he got hurt in the third quarter of that game, or the way he played in the Swamp. Now, Florida's a little bit different. Bama was a good defensive team. Florida was a terrible defensive team when he rolled up like 900 yards of personal offense. It was actually well over 500. What was the number that night? Did he have 600 yards of offense? I forget. It was a record-setting night. This guy is going to live and breathe and be the moment. He's been that in these two games. The 29 rush attempts the last two games, the most back-to-back he's had in any two games this year. You don't think he understands how much this team needs him to carry it? 13 carries against Tampa, 16 last week. This is do or die. There's no tomorrow. I don't care what kind of runs he makes. I want him to protect himself, of course. But if it's fourth and two, you're not worrying about protecting yourself, and he won't. His playmaking, his clutch factor, he's the number one in this game. If he plays like he's played 95% of the time this year, they're not scoring less than 24. And that puts them into probable winning area. Number three. You can't let Saquon Barkley and the Philly running game dominate when they have the ball with or without Jalen Hurts, with or without Jalen Hurts being 100%. Philly's game plan, anybody's game plan against this Washington team, is the game plan that we think of sometimes, and that is keep your offense on the field and keep the other team's offense off it. Now, in Philly's case, it's you're keeping your offense on the field. You need to score. You need to possess the ball because you don't want to let Jaden Daniels back out onto the field. It's not that you're worried about your defense. In Washington's case, is you want to dominate time of possession. You want to score on, you know, 5 of 9 or 6 of 10 drives, you know, in the game, because you don't want your defense back out on the field. But Philly's best way to beat Washington is, I think, on offense, because I don't think any defense can really stop Jaden Daniels and Washington's offense. Let's not forget, Washington pulled off an all-timer. They scored 36 points in an NFL game, all of the points scored on offense, and still overcoming 5 turnovers. That's insanity. By the way, the next week they were penalized 13 times and scored 30 against Atlanta. Philly's got to keep Washington's offense off the field. That's how they win this game. And to keep Washington's offense off the field, more likely than not, they've got to run the football because that's who they are. And so Washington's got to load up the box. They've got to play with discipline. They've got to tackle well. And all 11, and this is one thing I 100% believe will be the case, they will be ready defensively, effort-wise. They have been all season long. They run it down. You know, they play to the whistle, all of the cliches. But you can't let Saquon and, you know, the Philly running game, however it is laid out, because we don't know what Hurts will be. Will he be a part of the running game? Won't he? If he isn't, you got a much better shot, because look what happened in the second half when Hurts wasn't there. Now, there was a big portion of the first half that Saquon Barkley kept running the ball well with Kenny Pickett in the game. But the second half, it was 16 for 33. Next up, you know, Washington's punted one time in two games. Philly's punted nine times in two games. If Philly punts 4.5 times in this game and we punt a half time, the average of the first two, Washington wins. Washington doesn't punt. They're a four-down team. Philly's a four-down team. But Washington doesn't punt often because they just don't get stopped in three downs in their own territory. If they get stopped in three downs, it's usually closer to the red zone area. They've already moved it 30 to 40 yards. I think just looking at punts, you know, there are a couple of things to look at, right? Turnover margin, obviously. Red zone margin, obviously. But I think the punt difference will be very telling. I think if you picked up the box score and you didn't see the game, and you looked first at turnover margin, that would be the first thing you'd want to look at. You'd want to look at probably red zone percentage next. But the third thing would be, how many times did they punt and how many times did we punt? They punt, we don't. Lastly, kicking's going to be huge in this game. Jake Elliott's been a mess this year, although he's never missed a playoff field goal. Interestingly, though, he's missed five playoff PATs, including two in the snow against the Rams. Zane Gonzalez, bless his heart, and what a story. I don't think anybody is super confident in Gonzalez. I don't think Eagle fans are super confident in Elliott. There's a chance this game is close and that the kickers will end up being the difference. Fingers crossed on that one. Predictions later on in the show. Ben Standing next.
Big weekend this weekend for the Commanders. They play in their first NFC Championship game in 33 years. You'll have the Westwood One broadcast on the Team 980 and 106.7 The Fan. Pregame with myself, Denton Day, and Leno Willingham starts 11 a.m., goes to 2 p.m. Eastern Time on 106.7 The Fan. Will be live from Honor Brewery in Sterling with a watch party to follow as the game kicks off with the Sports Junkies. Jalen Hurts was a full participant in practice on Thursday for the Eagles. Not a surprise there. Expected him to go this entire week. Elsewhere across the NFL, Liam Cohen apparently will take a head coaching job for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was in talks with them, then decided to go back to Tampa Bay on what we thought was a huge extension to be their offensive coordinator. And then the Jaguars fired Trent Baalke, and he's going back and having conversations with the Jags. Expect him to be officially named the head coach potentially today. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Raiders are nearing an agreement with Pete Carroll to be the team's next head coach. This according to Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport. So Pete Carroll could be joining Tom Brady over there in Las Vegas as the team's new head coach. Locally, the Capitals beat the Kraken 3-0 to win their sixth in a row. Alex Ovechkin scored goal number 875. That's 20 away from passing Wayne Gretzky. The Terps got a huge road win. They crush Illinois 91-70. Juju Reese went for 27-17. Derek Queen added 25. And that's what's trending.
Bill Barnwell at 11 from ESPN, he wrote something yesterday sort of describing and looking back on where Jaden Daniels' rookie season stacks up against the great rookie quarterback seasons and really just the great rookie seasons for any position. Clinton Portis will be with us at 11:35. Ben Standing, our Washington Commanders insider, is with us right now at Ben Standing on Twitter. Ben writes prolifically for The Athletic. I would suggest you subscribe. It costs hardly anything, a couple bucks a month. It's totally worth it. And Ben's got a podcast called Standing Room Only. Ben wrote a really good story on Terry McLaurin this week. I would urge all of you to read it. What a person Terry McLaurin is. We all know that. Excellent story, though, Ben, on Terry, for sure. All right, let's get to it. First of all, what is your guess on how Washington will replace Sam Cosmi?
Well, you know, they're obviously keeping it close to the vest. We got a little bit of, I wouldn't say mixed messaging, but Dan Quinn earlier in the week said, hey, we're definitely considering the idea of possibly moving Andrew Wiley to guard, which is where he played early in his career with the Chiefs, and therefore putting Cornelius Lucas at tackle. I guess I should say he didn't say those words specifically, but he said the idea of putting your best five on the field is definitely something they're considering, and that is kind of what that would mean. Cliff Kingsbury yesterday was asked about Trent Scott and just sort of answered it directly about how well the Trent Scott had played. I kind of feel like that's going to be the path. If this was like week six and they lost Sam Cosmi, then maybe what I did, the first one about putting your best guys out there is the way to go. But it, you know, if you move Wiley, now you're affecting two positions. So my guess is they would go with Trent Scott at this point, but
that is your guess. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's my guess. I mean, like I said, it just feels like, you know, I mean, Wiley hasn't played that spot in
right
a few years, so it's not like it's fresh. I mean, Trent Scott's played more recently than he has. But it's one of those deals where it's not like what's the best, like, you know, this option gives you this and this option gives you that. I don't think either one of these are particularly great options. I mean, the issue with, give Trent Scott all the credit for what he did the other day. He wasn't going up against Jalen Carter, arguably the best defensive tackle in the league right now. So it's a tough matchup. They're going to have to find ways to, you know, for whoever is there to probably, you know, provide some double team help, whether that's a tight end or the running back or what have you. But that's my guess. But it's not a great option. And if you tell me that the Eagles, you know, offense or Eagles defense is able to slow Washington down to some degree, I would have to imagine it's because Jalen Carter, you know, just was just pure havoc out there. You know, that I think that's definitely a possibility.
Any other injuries? Wagner ankle, you know, is everything a go for him as it was last week?
I was talking to him for a minute, and the injury report had just come out yesterday with him on it. I was like, hey, anything to worry about? He just kind of scoffed and walked off. So no, I think he's good. Nothing there. It looks like, again, they're going to be pretty healthy, you know, all things considered for this time of year.
All right, you're there every day. This has become very clear, and they've talked about it, but you've lived the experience of being on the beat for now the entire season and preseason and off season. What can you say, and what have you observed in terms of this belief, this brotherhood, this swag, this confidence that they're not just here to, you know, for grins and giggles as a surprise team, but they're here to win it?
Yeah, I we've talked before in general about, you know, the idea of tanking, you know, that we see prevalent in the NBA world, and is that even conceivable in the NFL world? And my answer is always, and again, just for those who don't understand, tanking is not the players or coaches laying down. It's, you know, right, sort of, can the team put out a poor enough roster to thus they're just not really competing? And in the NFL, it's always kind of like, well, it's kind of impossible to tank because every team is going to have viable players. You know, you can go back to look at even the worst teams here for the last, you know, 20 odd years, right? You still, you know, just even last year's team, you still had Terry McLaurin, you still had the defensive tackles, right? I mean, it's not like, you know, you still had Sam Cosmi. It's not like you had, you know, Lemmings out there, right? So, okay, so that said, they did change personnel a lot, as we know, and I just still, you know, they maintain they weren't really trying to do this, but Bobby Wagner is not going to play a year of football thinking this is just for, you know,
right,
blanks and giggles.
Development of the quarterback.
right. Same with, you know, Zach Ertz, and same with all these guys. So to that end, you know, they have those pieces. But, the extra secret sauce beyond Jaden Daniels, you know, performing at incredibly high levels, especially for a rookie quarterback we've never seen before, I really do think this sort of camaraderie, this brotherhood thing, has really been what's taken them a long way. I Dan Quinn has come in, and you know, whatever the controversies or whatever the debates were about whether he was the right coach or not, the thing that seemed to me to make a lot of sense was he was a guy that was going to reestablish the standard here, reestablish a baseline of what it meant to play here. And I know people were saying, oh, it sounds like just like Ron Rivera. With no disrespect to Ron, that always at times felt performative. This felt authentic. And I wrote a story earlier in the year talking to players, like, what is it about Dan Quinn that makes him, you know, such a connector? And, you know, to a man, they all just talked about, you know, he comes to them and talks, not just, hey, you got to do better, you know, stopping the run, or, you know, you're blocking, you know, it was like, hey, how's life? How is it going? And the way he talks to them, you know, they all feel the authentic, genuine connection, and that he wants these guys. In the story I wrote the other, you mentioned, but about McLaurin, I had a line in there, something about that McLaurin likes the atmosphere in the locker room because it's not just the coaches trying to turn you into these, you know, tackling machine cyborgs. He wants to develop the person. He wants you to know the other guy in the locker room. You know, they shifted the whole locker room seating organization. It used to be basically positions grouped together. Now it's, you know, a quarterback next to a safety, next to a tight end or what have you. So you get to know everybody on the team in a personal way more than you did before. And all of these things may sound hokey and cliche or whatever, but I really do think it has worked, and that led to this belief. And again, when you have guys like, you know, like Dan Quinn preaching this, like Joe Witt preaching this, like Bobby Wagner and others, I mean, they have just maintained this belief all year. I mean, that's why, to me, it's just an incredible – like, they haven't had, you know, if you throw out week one against Tampa, they really haven't had one clunker as a team. Even that first Philly game, the defense was wiped out in the first, you know, half to three quarters, right? I mean, the offense took some minutes, but, like, it wasn't like they didn't show. How many times have seen any team, even the best of teams, have games where, like, okay, they clearly weren't in mentally in this one. Has not happened all year. So I think it really is a testament to this internal belief that they have. And, you know, I this last thing I'll say on this is, you know, I've always said that for all of Dan Snyder's sins in terms of the football team, the one that probably I thought got overlooked the most was how he gutted any sense of what a standard was here. I know that he took over a team that was still, at that point, a few years removed from the Super Bowl teams, but you still had the Brian Mitchells and Daryl Greens and guys who understood what it took. And he replaced them all with hired mercenaries who only were there more or less, not saying for the money, but they weren't there for camaraderie. They weren't there because they wanted to be the burgundy and gold. And it completely evaporated. And really, you know, I mean, that's why I give Dan Quinn a lot of credit. He's now made it such that here's the deal. If you want to be here, this is the deal. And clearly these guys are adhering to that.
I had a thought when you just mentioned Rivera, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but everybody, I think, knows who Greg Zuerlein is and his significance to Jaden Daniels being here. Last year, the end of the 23 season, it was actually the third to last game of the year, Christmas Eve, 2023. They're playing the Jets. Jacoby Brissett comes off the bench, lights it up. Washington roars back from a big early deficit to take the lead, and it looks like they're on their way to win a game that you just don't want them to win because it will mean several spots, or at least a few spots, in draft order. But the Jets drive into field goal range at the very end over the last few seconds, and Greg Zuerlein drills a 54-yard field goal. Actually, I went and watched it the other day. It just barely got inside the left upright. And that's the difference between, you know, Washington having the 2 pick versus having the 4 pick and not having a chance at Jaden Daniels. But the other thing that occurred to me is, you, for whatever reason, and I don't think we've talked about this, last year after that game, they still had 2 more games. Now, they were against much better teams, the 49ers and the Cowboys. But Jacoby Brissett was going to start the next game against the 49ers. And at that point, it had probably become pretty clear that you didn't want to lose the number 2 spot. You wanted to be in the top 2 spots. And mysteriously, they came up with a hamstring injury for Brissett, and Howell ended up starting against San Francisco and Dallas to finish up the season, and they got absolutely blasted in the final two games. Now, does Brissett win one of those two games? Probably not. Do they have a better chance to pull an upset? 100% in that moment. Do you think Josh Harris and company stepped in and said, please don't win these last two games? Start Sam Howell, not Jacoby Brissett.
While that certainly would be an option and a very, very logical one for the owner to take, I kind of remember thinking, I had the impression that Jacoby Brissett was making a business decision and being like, hey, I'm about to be a free agent.
Okay.
I think so. That was the impression I got. I mean, you know, let's remember, like, you know, the season prior, right, it was going to be Taylor Heinicke starting week 18, even though we're like, wait a minute, why on earth would you not start Sam Howell now? And so I just feel like Ron's, he always took sort of the short-term, we got to win today view. So I, you know, and I would also bet in his optimistic ways that he wasn't viewing it as like, hey, you know, I think he's the type that views it as, hey, what do we need to do to win? Not,
okay,
it would be cool to get the draft pick.
I mean, I remember Brissett was scheduled to start, and then early in that week, he had a hamstring injury, and then all of a sudden, he wasn't starting. You know, and part of it, too, was that Sam Howell had just taken a beating, you know, and they just didn't want to. It was almost mercy at that point for Sam Howell to start Jacoby Brissett, and yet they ended up starting Sam Howell in either case, and it worked out for the best for the franchise, clearly. All right, Sunday. Anything from the second game in particular that stands out as significant for Sunday in Philadelphia? I'm talking about the game a month ago.
Well, I mean, you know, the obvious, they won because, you know, again, you got to have the confidence, you know, to believe that you can get it done. They haven't lost, obviously, two games to any one team this year, so that, you know, they avoided that. They know they can get this done, even in a game though they committed five turnovers. So I think there's that as sort of a basic level. But I mean, I think, you know, we all know that there's like this somewhat of an asterisk in that game because Jalen Hurts was hurt, and you know, Kenny Pickett actually played fine, but you know, he doesn't have the same mobility that Hurts does. His absence allowed Washington to have a better shot at slowing down Saquon Barkley, who what did he have, like 100 odd yards and two touchdowns in the first quarter, and then was held to around like 60 the rest of the game.
Right.
So you know, I think when you don't have Hurts' ability to run and you don't have to worry about that, similar to how Washington is, you know, when you're defending Jaden Daniels and his offense, you don't have the run option, is a different deal. But I also think another key I thought was Quincy. Chauncey Gardner Johnson?
Yeah,
getting ejected in the game.
Right.
You know, at the moment it was kind of like, all right, this guy's a bit of a hothead. He's out. It is what it is. But you know, I do think that in talking to some people this week up on the Philly way, that like, you know, that was a much bigger deal than maybe we all let on. And you know, Jaden throws five touchdown passes, three in the fourth quarter, and you know. Because I remember myself even saying, hey, Jalen Hurts wasn't playing defense. You know, can't just blame it on that. But, you know, he did. I think his absence meant something as well. He's obviously a veteran back there, a physical presence and all that. So I do think that's something to consider. On the other hand, John Allen wasn't playing in that game. He's, of course, now back out there now and had a pretty good game, I thought, against Detroit. Washington still has not been able to stop the run. But, you know, at a minimum, he's a better option than, say, Fedarian Mathis or, you know, someone like that, Carl Davis or whomever in that game, and having him out there now to, you know, give you another talent right there in the interior against Saquon Barkley, which is, you know, more or less feels like the key to this game. You know, I mean, if you can slow down Barkley enough, you know, avoid those monster runs, which he seemingly gets every week, you know, that to me sounds like, you know, Washington's, like, best path to winning. I don't think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I don't even know what the over-under is, but It feels like it's going to be more of a 48. Okay, well, it feels like it's going to be more of a grinded out NFC style back in the day, where like maybe first team with 24 wins versus like what we saw last week,
36-33.
So I think those are a couple of things. Jalen Carter was a monster in the first game. The second game, they got a better handle on him a bit, but that was with Sam Cosmi. So that's the deal. And, it's hard to say. I can't even say what was the game that showed everybody that Jaden is a cyborg. But, that was just another one where we were like, you got to be kidding me. How does this kid keep doing this? That's been
the 4th and 11 run, late third quarter. That's the play of the game, because if they don't get that, they're down 13. Philadelphia's got field position. So that was an insane play. All right, I got 20 seconds. Prediction.
Well, I have been wrong 2 weeks in a row here on this. Not that I thought they didn't have a chance, but just kind of felt it was just gonna come to an end. I can't shake the feeling that just from a pure momentum, confidence standpoint, that they're gonna somehow get this done. And it keeps reminding me of the Georgetown Villanova game back in the day, another Philly DC matchup where, on paper, this should not be. It should be pretty obvious who's going to win. But the division rival, you're not afraid, you're not intimidated, and you're the team who's on the bigger emotional confidence role. So I'll go Washington
24-23. Heading to New Orleans. Good job. Appreciate it. I'll talk to you this weekend.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. Bill Barnwell dove deep, as he always does, and he figured out whether or not Jaden's season is the greatest season in the history of any rookie to play in the NFL. We'll talk to him next.